Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome to Roguecast episode 203. We are again Nicholas.
Yep. And I believe that means we're going to have a micro episode.
It is. It's a micro, a mini-sode, if you will.
Yes, a micro-sode.
Micro-sode.
It's a Micronauts-themed episode.
A tiny-sode.
Yes. Let's talk about only Micronauts comics, because everybody knows about Micronauts, right?
It's a good idea. Yeah, just we're all Micronauts. Actually, if you just play this super fast, it'll sound like we're from the speaking of the Microverse.
Yeah.
Because we'll be a little tiny, high-pitched voices. Or turn it down really low. That will give you the Micronauts experience.
I want them to make it super deep. And we all come across as Barry Whites.
Or Baron Karza.
Yeah, Barry Karza.
Barry Karza.
This is a weird opening.
He's the soul singer of Microverse. Which nobody can hear him because he's in the Microverse.
That's true.
Nobody knows who the Microverse is, right? Like, we're just babbling to no one right now?
To our
four listeners who know?
No, there is actually, I suspect, a fair amount of Micronauts knowledge among our listeners.
That's probably true. Actually, I noticed...
A surprising amount.
I noticed, Dave, you're wearing an Ant-Man shirt, which is thematically tied to a Microverse episode.
Yes. And you're wearing a S.H.I.E.L.D. shirt, which is not...
It's thematically tied to Ant-Man, though.
But it's tied to Ant-Man. It's a ballpark. So, yeah. We're themed up.
And we don't know what Nick's wearing, but presumably it's also somehow tied into the theme.
Yes. He's weirdly wearing a Baron Karza shirt.
Bring back Barry Karza.
Baron Karza was such a Darth Vader ripoff.
Absolutely.
But a cool one.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to do our usual thing where we pick comics, and we're going to pick Nick's comics. We're pretty confident in our choices.
Yep. I don't know. Did you mention there's like no real news of note?
Right. So there's not a ton of news. So we're actually doing this. We're going to go through the store news. We're going to write into comics, and that'll be it.
Yep.
Then you're all dismissed.
Yep.
And you can go have ice cream.
Yay.
Okay. So.
And you know what, Randy? Even though I don't usually have topics, I will briefly discuss Far Cry 5.
Oh, okay.
I'll just throw that all in right. The mix at the very end.
All right, so D&D Adventurers League, just a reminder, we have that on Thursdays and also Tuesdays now, and starting next Tuesday, we will have two DMs.
Yeah, so start spreading the word if you know folks looking to play. If Tuesday works for you, yeah. We got spots.
Make sure and call in. We do fill up, but call in the morning on Tuesday or Thursday, get a spot, come out and play some D&D.
Yes, as always, I'm excited at D&D's ascendance.
Yes.
Soon they will all join our cult, and we can all go into the sewers and get people killed.
Yeah. that all checks out. And then I believe this is, what, it's been 2 weeks. Yeah, in about 2 weeks is the Action Comics 1000 midnight release.
Oh, wow. Sneaking up on.
It is.
But it's going to be cool.
Yeah, there'll be a bunch of different covers. All the DC stuff will be on sale that week.
Is there any chance that Marvel or any of their companies will release their stuff as
Not
well?
Not likely.
I know that they've done that once or twice in the past, but mostly don't.
Yeah. I think DC matches, Marvel doesn't.
Right.
So yeah, we won't be able to sell most of the stuff that week. We will sell DC Comics that night. And we'll close up as normal at 9. We'll reopen about 10:30. We're going to do a DC deck building tournament. Maybe put on like Superman animated series and
Yep. Kind
of have some fun before we start selling comics.
Perhaps Nick will make a Superman-themed cake.
He might.
He made a Watchmen cake. He needs to make a super cake.
Yes. Then on Sunday, April 22nd, we have our Magic the Gathering Dominaria pre-release. It's the newest set. That also, that weekend, you can pre-order booster boxes of Dominaria.
Right, it's the first time they've ever allowed any sales in that week between the pre-release and the actual release, roughly a week.
Well, it's not the week, it's just the weekend.
It's just that weekend.
You can pre-order a booster box of Dominaria, and if you do that, you can pick it up on Saturday or Sunday, and you get the box and the buy box card, and you get it a full week ahead of when the stuff releases.
Yep, you get bragging rights against all your chump friends.
That's right. And then finally, ending April, we do Saturday, April 28th, it'll be International Tabletop Day. Loads of game demos. You can find all the info on that on our website and our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's jump into comics.
Sure.
We're talking comics the week of Wednesday, April 4th. And I'm going to kick us off with... Actually, I'm going to kick us off with Nick's cheater picks first. Why not?
Okay, yeah. We don't know what Nick's picks are, but in a way we do know what Nick's picks are.
We're pretty
having
sure.
Done this podcast and known him for like a decade plus or whatever.
So we're guessing that Nick's picks are going to include Batman number 44, which has a Batman, Catwoman...
Is it the culmination? It's not the wedding
itself.
It's not
the wedding.
But it's a wedding-related issue.
It looks like a Catwoman's night out kind of thing.
Well, from what I could tell, Randy, it was flashing back to various eras of Catwoman. The very first flashback is literally when she was just like in a green dress from the 1940s or maybe even late 30s first appearance of her.
Yep.
And then you see her in the famous kind of the purple costume with the dress portion. I don't know if it gets up to Deodato's era of the 90s. I didn't see that in there. But it seems to be, I'm guessing, kind of a montage of their meeting, their first meetings over the years.
Yes, that seems where it is. And also, in between the interstitials is her, like, trying on dresses.
Yep.
Looks like maybe she breaks into a place and tries on a bunch of wedding dresses.
Yep. Not a comic I would say to give to a kid who comes in is like, I want Batman comics.
Yeah, no.
But to anybody who's been following Tom King's, I'm sure it's another winner.
And then the newest spinoff from Metal, The Curse of Brimstone, which is written by, is it Philip Tan or Billy Tan? It's written by one of the Tans. And I'm looking, and they don't put their creative credits anywhere.
So what I remember from making the sign for this was that it's a supernatural story, but I forget the specifics, but it looks like Brimstone, who previously was like a big old DC giant, one of those giant-sized villains, the same size as like, do you say Chemo or Chemo?
I say Chemo.
Okay. I'm going to call him Chemo because he's filled with chemicals, and Chemo seems a little dark for a villain, no matter what.
Fair enough.
But yeah, they all... anyway, he was a biggie-sized villain who I happen to remember was in that Suicide Squad first appearance way back in the 80s. But this is a new incarnation of him, and he's, I think... So what it struck me is reminding me a little bit of the out-of-control elements of the Demon, maybe?
And the Hulk.
And the Hulk,
It's like the Hulk, but he's a fiery Hulk.
But a supernatural one. So if you're looking to see a DC character who has, like, supernatural elements and may end up taking a major supernatural role, like, I can see the Justice League bringing him in on stuff like that.
So it's created by Justin Jordan and Philip Tan.
Okay.
And then... Nick, I'm going to give Nick a third cheater pick just because Deathstroke versus Batman starts in Deathstroke number 30. It's by Priest. It's a, like, there's a whole, like, title treatment of it. Like, they're definitely playing up.
Right, it almost looks like the title could be called Deathstroke versus Batman, even though it is just a Deathstroke issue.
So if you want to see Deathstroke fight Batman, that's a good place to go.
Yes.
All right, now on to my picks.
I like Nick's picks better. Your picks stink.
You didn't even read Nick's picks.
It's true. And yet I still... No, I was just kidding. I think at least one of these books on your picks is one that I liked as well. I have not been keeping up with all things Tom Taylor.
Yeah. So All-New Wolverine number 33 starts Tom Taylor's final All-New Wolverine story. And in doing
His final one?
Yeah. So in doing that, he is going to the future and doing a Old Woman Logan story, or Old Woman Laura story. And I saw him post about this on his Facebook. I've always been intrigued by it. And the base of the deal is that Gabby has grown up and is now in her, like, I don't know, 30s or 40s, and is out adventuring and being a hero. And Laura has been voted Princess of Madripoor, or Queen of Madripoor.
And if I'm not mistaken, just from what I saw making the signs for this, the future is, like, somewhat utopian?
That's what I was going to say. Tom Taylor, when he posted on Facebook about this, noted that everybody does, like, Days of Future Past and Dark Futures, and Taylor certainly has written a lot of darkness and injustice and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But this is the heroes won future. Mm-hmm. This is a utopian, everything is pretty good. The character he picks to be the U.S. president is great. Laura's the head of state. She's almost got a little more of a Black Panther vibe going, and then she's the head of Madripoor.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was this big war with one of the big Marvel supervillains, and so the last remaining sort of threat, Laura has a reason where she's having going on one last mission, and she meets up with the older version of various Marvel characters, and goes on a mission to deal with the last remaining threat to this utopian world. It's really good. It's really optimistic. It's really funny. It's a good capper to a run that I've really been enjoying.
That's cool. This is not like the one and only issue, right? Or is it like miniseries?
No, it's the final arc.
Okay.
So it's the thing I really like about this is that nobody does like bright futures. And also, I've really liked what Tom Taylor did with All-New Wolverine. And I know that Mariko Tamaki's going to come over and take over the book. But for me, this kind of is the end of it. So I like that I'm basically getting a capper. I like when people give a finale to their run, so you can sort of view it as a closed-ended run.
Totally, totally.
So, good stuff. And also the first appearance of future-looking costume.
Can I ask, is the threat, is it something that is known, or is it kind of an original threat?
No, it's known.
Okay.
It's a big threat.
Is it the Vulture?
It is not the Vulture.
But like a much more powerful version?
It is not the Vulture. Nor is it the Owl.
Okay.
Nor is it the Spot.
Okay.
Dave,
I think that was everybody I had.
Dave, what's your pick?
My pick is the second issue of Jeff Lemire's Dr. Star and the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows. This is his companion one of the companion miniseries to Black Hammer.
Oh, do you like Black Hammer?
I'm a bit of a fan.
Really?
I was not originally a fan.
Really? Who put you onto that?
Something came along. I think it was probably just internet buzz.
Yeah, you son of a bitch.
Well, I think you had picked it once or twice, I guess. So this is his kind of character that's something of an analog to Starman, or more specifically, the Golden Age Starman.
Yeah.
But the influence is clearly from the James Robinson's 1990s
Which
Starman
was
series.
So much about the Golden Age Starman.
Right. But also, I mean, about his kid and, yeah, and yeah. dealing with that. And it and I think I would say that informs like almost everything Lemire writes that's superhero-y.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of that sort of deep character writing. And this is a guy who was like had been around, you know, sort of the World War II era heroes. And he seems like what we got from the first issue is that he was sort of a scientist contracted by the government to help them out, sort of to deal with, I think, primarily like wartime dangers, you know, we need to build this before the Nazis do it and kind of stuff. But he ends up kind of becoming obsessive about it and getting an ego too and kind of compromising his family. And this issue, one of the things I like about Jeff Lemire is a lot of times he'll write and he'll do like a mini series, but each issue still kind of stands alone. Did you read this one, Randy? Did you read this yet?
No, I have not just read this yet.
This one, it's another issue that kind of feels like it stands alone. Like occasionally I'm like, well, I can't remember quite where this left off, but it doesn't matter. When it begins, he is visiting his son in the hospital, and his son is dying, and it's pretty dark. His son is like bald, looks like he's probably been going through chemo and stuff like that, and he looks to be middle-aged, and his son almost looks like, if not older, then like almost like the same age, and there's some weirdness. And then it flashes back, and the story is kind of about how he got there and sort of some of his failures with his kid, where he was a little too obsessed with discovering life on other worlds, and you know, his kid was super excited about it, and he's kind of like, yeah, but daddy's got to go deal with this on his own, you kind of can't be a part of this. And then we definitely see there's a in the present time where his son is very kind of clearly near the end. The son's wife has a big issue with him, and they have an interesting sort of blow up in the hospital. And then there's a flashback to a really interesting sequence where we see the sort of first life he discovers, which is actually cool and suitably alien looking. Take a look, Randy. Look at these cool looking weird aliens.
That was cool.
This artist, I forget who it is, Max Fiumara,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, he's done some stuff for Red Image with Joe Kelly or Joe Casey.
Yeah, something about like his work on this, along with the Dave Stewart on the colors. Dave Stewart's coloring is like, as always, out of the park, super great. And so you get this kind of Silver Age story, but with lensed through the kind of, I'm going to say, you know, sort of darker, more realistic stuff that Lemire does. And there's also a great sequence with him hanging out in a bar and running into essentially the old man version of, take a look, Randy, of Hawkman. And
great look.
Yeah, and so he's like basically picturing like an old dude who just has hawk wings sticking out of his back. And the guy is kind of, there's an interesting conversation here. He's talking, they're kind of shooting the shit about like, oh, heroes are different now. Things are a little bit, you know, they kill sometimes. And there's clearly like this Punisher analog called the Skull Digger that's on the TV. And he's like, we didn't do that. And he's like, well, we killed when we were in the war, but it was war. And it's just some interesting conversations going on between kind of two old Justice Society types. An interesting resolution to the issue, which I believe will set the tone for what everything that will happen since this, because he gets a certain resolution in it, Dr. Star, that will for sure be the driving force behind everything else he does. But again, it's like, it works as a standalone issue. Like, if you've forgotten everything that happened in issue one, that's all right. This issue tells you everything you need to know.
Or if perhaps you went down an alley and someone hit you with a sap.
Right.
Knocked you out and you lost memory.
If you've literally lost your memory, yes. And perhaps you were the killer.
Yeah.
But you don't know it until you find out.
You can still read this issue.
You can read and enjoy this before the law catches up with you.
Yeah.
That's a very good point, Randy.
Yeah.
And an excellent example.
All right. My other pick is Analog, a new Image book from Jerry Dugan, and the artist is O'Sullivan.
Just O'Sullivan?
Well, it's one of they did this crazy thing where they do a redacted credits. Because they redacted the first names, and I'm like, well, that's great for Jerry Dugan and Jordy Belair. I know both their names, but I don't know who the hell O'Sullivan is, and you basically just redacted the guy's credit.
That's funny. Yeah, for the first issue, although thematic, I know it actually does fit the theme.
I don't know who it is.
But, yeah.
I don't know the guy's name is. No, it's nowhere else in the book. They redacted his name. That's not cool.
Yeah, it's funny kind of considering what the nature of this story is, because this story in a lot of ways is about too much information getting out there.
Yeah.
You want to go ahead and say the premise?
So basically this is a story about a world of 2024. The internet bubble has, or the cloud has burst. This is not unlike what happened in Brian Vaughn's story, Private Eye.
Yeah.
So everybody's secrets got out there, and everyone's gotten really internet gun shy. And so there's sort of like, there's two ways this world, you either sort of don't use the internet or phones or anything like that, or you've gone completely, like, given up privacy entirely.
Right, you just live your life completely openly.
There's like self-driving cars and people having sex in self-driving cars and posting on the internet and that kind of stuff. So,
right.
Like,
it's definitely good. This just felt pretty accurate, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Like, it's a little bit, this is a guy who's written a lot of Deadpool, it's a little bit sort of darkly funny, but it's also pretty straight. It's sort of, it's noir, if anything else. And the lead character is a guy who's a former NSA operative. He's like this courier and kind of a problem solver for various people who hire him. It opens with this sort of exchange in the park where he's giving a suitcase away to some people. And
he's very much outnumbered and has an interesting sort of solution to it. Sort of a bit of bravado that was kind of cool how he deals with them.
Yeah. But it's about him and what he does for a living, and then it ties into a not even remotely disguised Facebook Mark, what's his name, Zuckerberg?
Oh yeah, it's a total Zuckerberg.
And also reveals that maybe this guy, not only is he like a highly paid operative, not only does he live in this world, he is the guy who basically caused the explosion of the bubble.
Right.
And so we're going to see more of that. We see him checking on his dad. It's sort of, yeah, it's like hard-boiled Private Eye in this interesting world. I'm really curious where the actual story is going, but I like the setup quite a bit.
Yeah, it's sort of like,
David O'Sullivan, his credits are in here.
Aha. I was gonna say, it would seem a little bit weird if they, like, kind of hid the creators that well. But yeah, it is a sort of noir future, but an interesting one where There's definitely a realistic feel to some parts, even though it also has some action-adventure tropes in it, too.
Yeah.
But it's definitely what's going to happen. Everything is going to get outed on the internet, all of our secrets are going to go out there, and it'll be time for taking selfies while having sex in self-driving cars.
Is that not time now?
No, because they crash sometimes.
Oh,
so as soon as they get the crashing thing worked out, then it's time.
Good point. Dave, what's your backup pick?
My backup pick is the perpetually picked Runaways. In this case, it's Runaways number 8. I think what I like most about this issue is the inclusion of Julie Power from Power Pack. She's Carolina's girlfriend now, and they're doing a long-distance relationship, which, as she knows, is sometimes workable because Carolina can fly at night light speed, so apparently they can get together when they periodically when they want to.
Yep.
Julie can fly at light speed.
Power,
yeah,
yes.
Julie Power. I don't know if people have a strong remembrance of Power Pack, but they were like the 80s kids superhero team that was actually very well done. That was written by, a lot of people are familiar with Walt Simonson, the famous artist, but his wife Louise Simonson wrote a ton of stuff, and the 80s was kind of one of her heydays, and she created Power Pack. And, There was a vibe that I kind of consider to be something of a Harry Potter vibe to it, of these kids having adventures, sometimes in space, sometimes on Earth. There was a big enough push for them that they, like, met the X-Men, and they met Spider-Man, and they met with everybody. And now there's, if you kind of imagine maybe, like, 8 or 10 years added on to that, they've roughly grown up. And yeah, so Julie is Carolina's girlfriend, and because Rainbow Rowell is so good at it, the slight ups and downs of their relationship are really well portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
It begins with a very relatable, you were supposed to pick me up at the airport, but something came up, which we kind of have an understanding that Carolina and the other characters have new responsibilities and essentially have to become parents for, like, Molly. Is it Molly?
Yeah.
Molly. And but try telling that to the girlfriend who's waiting for you to pick her up at the airport, and you're not there. That's super not cool.
Well, Dave, when you told your girlfriend that, first of all, Molly's fictional. And that's why that excuse didn't work.
You know, she feels real to me.
Yeah.
I feel like she's a real character.
That excuse will also not work.
I thought it would sell the lie.
Yeah, it's also not going to work.
There's a subplot going here with Molly and her new best friend forever from junior high, who's a weird person,
yep.
who has a weird secret.
Yes.
Which we don't know all the nature of, but there is definitely some weirdness in there. But it does have to, it has an interesting sort of subtext to do with kind of like, do you really want to grow up?
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's interesting about that is the meta narrative of that, like that. Characters don't usually grow up in comics.
Right, right.
And so it's interesting to sort of be presented with this character of like, well, what if you did? What if you don't have to?
Right, yeah. It throws out an interesting question. As always, there's kind of like just the group antics.
Yeah.
They all meet Carolina's girlfriend. Maybe not for the first time. They'd met her before.
Gert was dead when she showed up, I think.
Hilariously, Molly super fangirls on her.
I thought that was off tone, actually.
Really?
Molly's never been like a super huge, like, that's more of a Miss Marvel thing. I didn't feel like Molly was a fan.
Oh, it felt like something that might have, she's like, in a lot of ways, is always the, doing whatever you would think the youngest kid in a group would do.
Yeah.
And so her fangirling actually felt normal to me.
Oh, it seemed weird to me. It didn't seem like Molly to me.
What was she mentions at some point that they have met her before.
Yeah.
But that,
She didn't know she was cool.
Right. She's like, yeah, I didn't know you were cool then. let's see. Then what happens? Oh, yeah. And they face a surprise threat.
Yep.
Randy, do you think that is actually who that threat appears
yeah,
to be?
It is.
Okay. Because that is a person with actual ties to one of their characters.
Yep.
But who is an A-list Marvel villain.
Yep.
And I just didn't know quite what that character had been up to lately, yeah. but it does fit with what I generally know. So yes, these characters take on an A-list threat.
Not well.
Not well. and let's see. I'm trying to remember where this all ends up. Oh yeah, that's right. Things don't go well for them.
Nope.
The cover to the next issue envisions that A-list threat more as I traditionally know him.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's another winner of an issue. The story is. You know, the character stuff is almost always what I am mostly there for, but this one is interesting in that it has a kind of more of an action thing than it's been doing, so, and certainly this would be an increase in the level of villainy they've faced since the first one was like a slightly spooky ant or whatever.
Yeah.
And now they're going up against somebody who, I guess I should avoid saying who it is.
Yes.
But I'm just going to say A-list.
Yeah, but it's not a spooky ant.
It's not a spooky ant, yeah. And whoops up on them in an entertaining way.
Yep. Dave, what else do you have on your list?
All right, what else is on the list? I'm a little bit behind, but the new issue of Rogue and Gambit.
Yep.
Let's see. I have not read this. I don't know anything about Sonic the Hedgehog, but there was a new Sonic the Hedgehog comic, which, since that is like one of the longest-running popular kids comics of our era... What's that?
Longest running.
yeah, baby. So I remember like sometime in like the early 2000s reading an article. I think like Jim Valentino was being interviewed, and he was saying like that most people, like adults, were kind of not aware, but Sonic had been at that point running for like 5 or 6 years,
yep.
and was like doing huge numbers. I guess like the Archie people have it previously.
Would you say he was running rings around other comics?
Yes, I would. Collecting rings, perhaps.
Collecting rings.
Was it Archie previously though?
Yes, it was Archie previously.
Yeah, and it is true. Like I had no idea that this comic was pretty beloved in circles, and then I would, you know, once I was actually working in the biz, I would go on to see it did have this dedicated following. Which was left with no series to read for a few years as Archie lost the license, but now...
It hasn't been years.
Wasn't it? A couple of years? I don't know. I bet it was 2 years, right?
Maybe. I don't know.
All I know is that we had enough time to sell out of most of the graphic novels that we had from the Archie era, which was a lot, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, now IDW has it, and I assume that they're probably going to do justice to it. Randy, do you know, is it the writer who was...
Do you mean they'll do justice to it the way that Sonic does justice to Dr. Robotnik?
I think that might be a stretch in the Sonic metaphor territory. Do you know if the writer is the same one who
is... It is the same writer, yes.
So this will have a certain feel of continuity to the people who've been up with it since forever. But yeah, Sonic is back. Sonic is back. There's a it's a new sequel video game thing. I have no idea. I've never followed this before, Randy, but that Swashbucklers series.
Swords of the Swashbucklers.
Yeah, was a big thing in the 80s. Was Butch Geist one of the artists on that?
I think he was.
Yeah, I just remember it was kind of like, I gathered sort of a pulp sci-fi, swashbuckling sci-fi adventure.
Space adventure.
Yeah, and there was a new series based around that that was written by Mark Guggenheim, who's written some stuff I dig. In fact, is he writing X-Men Gold?
He's writing X-Men Gold.
Which had issue 25 hit this week. Seems like it might be one to check out if you kind of like the sci-fi space opera in that Star Wars tradition. Deathstroke, you mentioned that is Nick's pick, I believe.
Starts
the Batman storyline.
Sure.
There's a new Image comic called Isola, I-S-O-L-A.
Yep, which is very Miyazaki inspired. Very pretty.
Yeah, stunning artwork. And it's written by, what's his name, Brendan Fletcher. There's actually the same team, I guess.
By Carl Kirschel. It's some of the same
Gotham
team.
Gotham Academy. Yeah. And it's got elements, I would say, notably of Nausicaa, Princess Mononoke, and I think there was even something in there that I was like, oh yeah, and that reminds me of... But I'm going to blank on it. But his kind of more action-adventure-oriented ones, not his kiddier ones like Totoro or Kiki.
Yeah.
Star Trek Discovery gets an annual that fleshes out the backstory of Lieutenant Stamets?
Yep.
The big science guru who invented developed the mycelial drive and all of that stuff, the spore drive. So it's got flashbacks to his early stuff before he was on the Discovery, I believe. And I'm sure also, I haven't read it yet, but I'm sure also his relationship with Dr. Guy, I can't say his name. And then lastly, Frank Miller's got his sequel to 300, Xerxes.
Yep.
Which, I will just say, I thought this was going to be primarily about the Persian Xerxes, the Persian prince and stuff.
But it is not.
It is, I believe, a stealth Alexander the Great story, since he's kind of just in the background in here, but he is it is definitely looks like it's going to show his early days when the troops are unsure of him, but he's kind of a naturally brilliant leader.
He is the Alexander who is rising in the subtitle.
Yes, the full title being Xerxes, the Fall of the House of Darius and the Rise of Alexander.
Okay.
Cue the techno music and bullet time slow-mo.
Yep.
Randy, those are all my sort of side picks.
All right.
What else do you have?
So I was going to mention just a few things. Venomized number one comes out this week, so if you like the previous Venomverse stuff, this does feature characters going around shooting people with Venom guns, turning them into Venoms.
Right, I know that the big bad guys in it, whose name escapes me, like feed on symbiotes.
Yeah,
and I think their notion is to turn all the superheroes they can into symbiotes, which is like an especially delicious meal.
Yes,
like you're like it's not just normal chewy human center; it's a chewy like mutant center.
Yeah, it's
or
like
something.
Covering something in chocolate.
Yes,
if symbiotes were chocolate.
Right,
which we don't know. Could be Venom might taste like chocolate if you like him.
Noted for future encounters.
Yep. While he's trying to eat your brains,
yes.
lick his arms. So it tastes like chocolate.
You'll gross him out, and he'll leave you alone.
Yes. Demigod number one, which is by Ron Mars and Andy Smith, which is best described. What is it, Dave? The Power of Hercules, the Attitude of Deadpool.
Yeah, I think it's like almost like if a snarky maybe like kid who was super into Deadpool got like Thor or Hercules level powers. This is kind of imagining what might happen.
Right.
Which is going to be kind of messed up, I assume.
And then stuff that I really like this week on the Marvel side, Marvel 2-in-1 number 5, which is the Human Torch and the Thing have wound up in this alternate universe where Doom wound up with the power of Galactus, and they've met a Reed and Sue who are like an alternate world Reed and Sue. So this is an FF reunion in a way, but it is an alternate world Reed and Sue that reunion with, and they're dealing with a world where they're facing sort of an apocalypse from Galactus Doom.
Oh, interesting.
And it's been really good. I really like that. Punisher number 223 wraps up the Punisher as War Machine story. Is a really good wrap up, and then leads into Punisher with War Machine armor's next arc. Amazing Spider-Man number 788 as Spidey finally confronts the new Red Goblin. There's some cool power stuff in there. There's some great sort of supporting cast stuff going on. There's a big threat from the Red Goblin, and there's also this interesting thing of like. Flash is now Agent Anti-Venom, and I'm kind of liking that that story with him.
Weird. That sounds insane.
Yeah.
But since Flash's Venom actually ended up being an idea that worked, that sort of makes sense.
And, so lots definitely going on a high note. He's only got two more issues of his run. And then finally, X-Men Gold 25. I think this is a wrap-up of story that has been basically the X-Men were in prison, and Magic had to form another team, or Iceman had to form another team with, like, Magic and Armor and Rogue, and they're taking on this Negative Zone God, who's this big, powerful... Reminds me when the X-Men fought, like, the Living... Not Living Tribunal. Who's that guy?
Krakoa?
The Living Monolith, or whatever, is the guy who drew power from Havoc?
Yeah. The Living... There's, like, the Pharaoh guy. Yeah, that dude. Yeah.
There's also an appearance of a story element from the X-Men in Asgard, which was a... really pleasant surprise. Guggenheim continues to draw on sort of all my favorite X-Men stories for this.
Oh, I was going to say, if you have to quick put together a team, I'm neither here nor there on Armor, but having Rogue and who was the other one in there?
Magic.
And Magic in there, those are no slouches. Yeah. Those are like A-listers.
And also Armor and Ink, who are not A-listers.
Okay, well, you know, you get to work with what you got, right?
And the new Pyro, and Magma.
Why don't they just throw in Beak while they're at it?
But, yeah, so that was really fun. I'll continue to really enjoy X-Men Gold. And then X-Men Grand Design gets its collection here by Ed Piskor. This is his crazy putting all the X-Men into one big story. Sort of an indie style. It's the guy who did the history of hip-hop.
Yeah, and the collection is exactly that format.
The collection is a big, giant, oversized. It's only two issues, but it looks like it's a big chunk. It is Marvel Treasury Edition. It is a Volume 1. It looks like a big, oversized issue.
Yep.
It honestly... The design and the ability to sort of read everything at much bigger sizes where I think it actually works better.
Right, he kind of has a dense style, so seeing it embiggened is kind of nice.
It has restored my interest in it. It makes me want to go back and reread this. So it is a beautiful-looking collection.
Yep, and will presumably be the first of several that will ultimately come out to cover all the different eras.
Yep, and that's about it for us as far as comics go. Dave, you wanted to mention a video game you've been playing.
Yeah. Occasionally I like my short indie games like Journey and stuff like that, but I also have the desire to sometimes vent and shoot things. And for me, since I'm the only person in the world not playing Overwatch, I was required to play, I decided to pick up Far Cry 5. Now, I've only played one other in the Far Cry series, which was their Caveman one, Far Cry Primal. Which was pretty cool and awesome. These games all have a certain pattern to them, which is they're sort of open world. They pick their theme and they're really good at immersing you in it. And you kind of, overall, kind of usually are taking territory, striking out against bad guys, doing survivalist stuff, upgrading gear, and craft. There is like a crafting element to it. But in Far Cry 5, I think what sort of sold me is that it was kind of like you versus the alt-right.
Uh-huh.
Now, I do believe that was oversold in the promotions. I believe they even had, like, a picture of, like, a sort of Make America Great Again hat, like, with a bullet hole through it or something like that. But really what it is about, it is set in sort of rural America. It's, like, it's in Montana, I think. And it has to do with, like, a cult sort of thing, Branch Davidians, but in a more cinematic way with, like, scars, stuff like Bible verses carved into their skin and stuff like that. But a bunch of whacked-out rednecky types have formed this cult up here in this small town. And when it begins, there's a very dramatic, awesome sequence where you're going in with, like the FBI or ATF or something like that in a helicopter. You're the local, like, deputy is partially then the sheriff is with you, sort of representing, like, hey, let's not let this get out of control. I'm the sheriff. I can probably talk him down. You FBI guys, don't make your move. I'm sure things will go okay.
Uh-huh.
Believe it or not, things don't go okay.
Yeah, that'd be kind of a boring game.
Yep, and in fact, it starts out with a super, like, you're going to get a little bit of sample of a lot of the different stuff that happened in the game and a pretty kick-ass opening. A very cinematic sequence occurs out of that. And but what happened, where it becomes sort of open world is you do manage to kind of break away from things. There's multiple territories controlled by the guy and his family. Like, he's got two sons. They control two different territories. And one of them is like, this guy takes people out and he handles all the new recruits and baptizes them. And it's clear that they're using some sort of chemical type thing to sort of like a drug to addle people. And also they, you know, choke and drown you in the river, too. So they try and win you over to their side that way. He's also got a daughter, and it's like the daughter runs the, you know, she does the arms shipment and stuff like that. And so each one of them has a theme, and it's clear you're going to have to kind of work your way up the chain to take him down. Meanwhile, you're also saving other survivors. Those are kind of the random quests. The same way in like Grand Theft Auto, you would occasionally run into little micro quests, or in Red Dead Redemption, somebody be like, "Help, Sheriff! You know they're about to string me up or whatever," and you'd quick take a little side thing. They have similar ones where there's people who are resisting townsfolk because they've basically taken over the whole town, and there's no communications getting in or out, and So you'll need to do little rescues. They have people, regular patrols on the roads, which you can take down, and you can take their vehicles. But I also I did enough of that they're what's the guy's name? Pastor, is it John or something? I forget what his name is, but he's I aggravated him enough that he sent out a helicopter after me and convoys on the roads that were heavily armed. And I was oh, I'm going to really need to be super careful now, because the bad guy AI is pretty smart. And if you're not careful, they will take you down more often than you would like. you can hire other mercenaries. Sometimes townsfolk that you've saved can.
Is there a dog?
There is a dog, Boomer. One of the earliest things you can do is free Boomer, and he comes and joins you. There's other animals in there. You'll also do some hunting and things like that. And there's bears and wildcats and stuff that sometimes things that have been addled by the same drugs that they're using on people, they're experimenting with on the animals. And lots of fun moments have come about. I camped out on a roof and sniped at people while they had a bear in a cage, and I shot the lock off of it, and the bear turned back on them and kicked the crap out of them. But Boomer is your faithful dog companion that once you save him, he is a regular mercenary you can hire. There is, I can see from the track up ahead that I haven't reached, there is a bear that you can win over to your side, and I believe a bobcat as well. What's the name of the bear? Its name is Hamburger or something like that. The game has a sense of humor and generally pretty good writing. You're sort of over... The guy who contacts you on the radio and sometimes gives you missions is a Vietnam vet who's part of the resistance, but kind of he's kind of a good conspiracy theorist type guy who's also sort of a burnout case, but who's, was not going to take this crazy cult shit and backs you up. And as always in these games, there's planes you can get, you can get in boats on the river, almost anything you see or that the bad guys use against you, you can use against them. And it's pretty satisfying. There was a part where I met up with a chick who would later prove to be an awesome mercenary. She's a super good sniper, but she's an African-American chick whose family has lived here for a long time, and they have burial plots on her land. And when you arrive, the cult is trying to basically desecrate and destroy all the headstones. So you kind of have to help her with a holding action there. As the bad guys pour in for a while and they try and smash the headstones, you have to keep them at bay. And you're running, and her house, she's holed up it's a church. So you're up in the second story, and there's people crawling up on the sides and pulling up in cars. Well, at that point, I had gotten a rocket launcher. And so, while normally I would be having to snipe everybody, sometimes a car would pull up and six guys would be getting in, and I would just blow the whole thing to hell. Anyway, it's one of those kind of games you probably either know or not, whether you from the description, whether it's for you. But yeah, if you've been wanting to kind of have a shoot 'em up, it is a ton of fun to play. All the gear and stuff and leveling up is fun. Blowing up silos that belong to the cult is fun, and all that. So I'm recommending Far Cry 5 if you've ever wanted to shoot up the alt-right.
all right. That'll wrap it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more and with Nick. And until that time,
yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.